the last 2 months, I've been filling my brain with facts and filling notebooks with references to the details of the universe. And I just learned this afternoon, and I shared it with somebody here. I think, I forget who it was, but anyway, there's a thing called the cosmological constant. And when they do the mathematics on what works, how big the universe is, and how much of an explosion it had to be to make it come to, you know, into existence, there's only one answer that the scientists can come up with for the total amount of material that has to be, that had to have been there from the beginning. There are 120 billion galaxies that they have counted, more or less. They're pretty close in their estimate on how, and they can see, they can account for the galaxies that they found. And so they get their supercomputers rumbling, and they compute it all back to the point they can actually pretty much work out the math all the way to within a 10,000th of a second of when it started. And they figured out, and I shared this with the boys today, that the tolerance in terms of the size, the amount of material that could be in the universe, the tolerance is 10 to the minus 121st power. And what that means is that if there was a single grain of sand more, that much more mass in the universe, the weight of one grain of sand, or one grain of sand less, the entire universe would have collapsed on itself and would go out of existence. One of the things I'd like you all to do, if you have a Bible, is to open it to Hebrews 11th chapter. Christians have been fighting a losing battle for the last 100 years. They've been battling science. We should be rooting for science, because science is showing us the existence of God and the relevance of God without any reliance on the book, the Bible itself. We need the Bible, obviously. We need the Bible to guide our path, to develop our moral worldview. But we don't need the Bible to understand the universe. The universe explains itself now. Human beings with telescopes are able to read the book of nature, and they can tell how old things are and how things work together, and it's absolutely amazing. So turn to the book of Hebrews, the 11th chapter and the 3rd verse. And if you boys have a Bible, share it with each other. Through faith we understand, this is the King James, through faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so the things which are seen were not made of things which do appear. I read that my whole life, and I thought it meant that the creation, the worlds, the universe, it says in the NIV, we understand by faith that God made all that stuff out of invisible things. We don't need faith for that. They have cyclotrons that show us exactly what it's made of. It's, sure, it's invisible. It's little quarks and mesons and things. But, you know, it's invisible, but we can, human beings can bring it into the, into, make it, we can see it, we can measure it, we can calculate it, we can make a track of where it's been and predict where it's going to go. Don't need faith for that. It's a bad translation. The Bible doesn't say that. It doesn't say what it says in the NIV, that the universe is something we understand by faith. It says the eons are something we understand by faith. Through faith, we understand that the ages were framed by the word of God, the command of God. Everything that has happened in human history and everything that has happened in all the geological ages was commanded by God Himself, and everything that has happened was at His command, His direction. That we understand by faith. So that when we see things happening in the world today, when we see all the dysfunctional governments, when we see all of the good things and the bad things that the human race is doing, when we see that, we know that there's a plan, there's something magnificent that God has up His sleeve, and the Bible reveals that to us. What is it worth? What is it worth to know something of this? We think we know a lot. We probably don't know as much as we think we do, but we do know, it seems, more than Joe Sixpack walking down the street, you know. We have a privilege, we have a blessing in our lives that comes from God. There's a line in I think it's in Romans. Since my computer is not going to work for us, I'm just going to wing it here. But somewhere in Romans, I think around maybe the 13th chapter, it says, "When you knew God." And then he throws in a little parenthesis. He says, or rather, in other words, what I really should say is, when you became known of God. In other words, when God knew you, when God allowed Himself to come into your life, which He chose to do in advance of the rest of the world. Why did God do that? I mean, 13.7 billion years ago, He had His purpose down to the last grain of sand. It completes the circle of the Abrahamic promise, doesn't it? The stars in the heavens and the sand on the seashore, which, by the way, scientists have counted those now. He had that. And He decided to invite some folks, insignificant, generally dysfunctional folks. Except for you, Anna. So, It's a question that needs to be asked. It's a question that we need to ask ourselves. I had a gorgeous picture of Todd that would have brought the house down if I could have showed it to you. Talking about his faith that he talked about last night. And Todd focused on the how. I'm going to focus on the why. And that's just because our brains work differently. His brain works better than mine, but I'll do the best I can with why. Sometimes you and I put the fun in dysfunctional. Okay. By the way, this is not being recorded either. It's not being broadcast. This is just between you and me. So we can walk out of here tonight and forget this ever happened. Okay, let's see here. Let me pull some of my musings and writings out. I was going to tell you a story about a girl that was born a year before I was born, and she died 3 years ago. She was born in Serbia, and I got the original title of this talk from thinking about her. Her name is Vesna Velovic, something like that. I have it written down. I wonder if I can even see. I can't see anything. Wait a minute. Here it is. Vesna Velovic. Vesna Velovic. And she was a diminutive little blonde Serbian girl, and she was about 19 years old, and she decided to wanted to see the world, so she became a stewardess, and she went to work for Yugoslav Airlines. And in 1972, when she was about, I think about 23, and I had just been married for a year, or was about to be married, I guess, she was flying on an airplane from Sweden down to Czechoslovakia, and somebody put a bomb in their suitcase, and it blew up the plane. Everybody died except Vesna. Vesna had about five things going for her that made her very lucky that day. The first thing was that she lied when she took her test. She took six cups of coffee before she took her test because she had very low blood pressure. And she didn't want to not be chosen as a stewardess. So she jacked herself up and went and got the job. And then it was a good thing she did that, because when the airplane exploded at 33,000 feet, all of the air pressure immediately left the plane, and everyone's hearts exploded, and everybody was dead in seconds except her, because she had low blood pressure and it didn't blow up her heart. And the other thing that was lucky, the next thing that was lucky for her, was that she got, by the force of the explosion, it pushed her down in between two seats with a food cart on top of her, pinning her neck to the seat, so it was stabilized. And then the plane, she was in, they're not sure, but apparently she was in the back part of the plane, the tail section of the plane, and I had a picture of that to show you. There was a glide path, you know, there was a little wing on the tail section of the plane, and it created a glide path. So it came down, and it happened to come down at the same angle as the slope, the downward slope of the mountain that it had just passed over. So if it had come the other way, it would have crashed into the mountain, but it came down, and then it was covered with pine trees that had fresh snow on them. So that slowed it down just very gently, and she just kind of came down to a stop. And then the fifth thing that was lucky for her was that just at that moment in the clearing in the woods, there happened to be a man walking by who was a medic in World War II for the German Army. And she was bleeding profusely from every part of her body, and her back was broken, her hips were broken, her legs were broken, her arms were broken, and her skull was fractured, and she was screaming, though unconscious, and he whipped her into shape and got her to the hospital, and she lived. She was in a coma for 3 weeks, but then she woke up, and she had no memory of any of it. They said, there's pictures of her with all, you know, the traction and how she was just broken up into pieces. And they said, you will never walk again. And she was walking in 6 months.
Wow.
And she went back to work, and she wanted to be a stewardess again. And they didn't want to have the people upset to have this limping stewardess. So they gave her a desk job. But now she felt invincible, and she became somewhat famous. There's a picture of her with Paul McCartney. They had a very bad president named Slobodan Milosevic in that time, and she didn't like him, and she started protesting against him, and she lost her job over it, but they couldn't put her in jail because she was too popular. So it was too. How could you throw? You know, the universe saves her from falling from higher than the top of Mount Everest. Now Slobodan Milosevic is going to kill her. That wasn't going to work. So she just became basically. She went around and spoke, and they couldn't touch her. She gave speeches everywhere against them, and eventually, within a year or a year and a half, they brought him down. One of the war criminals of the modern era. Anyway, but then something interesting happened to her. She started having survivor guilt, and she became kind of a hermit and a recluse, and ended up in her last years of her life just living in her apartment with her cats and, you know, not talking to anybody. So at any rate, why do I want to tell that story? Because I want to turn it upside down for you. Because we think in terms of her being alive and living on, and we think in terms of the people who were with her dying. But that isn't the way the Bible presents it. The Bible says she was already dead. And they were too. Nobody died in that plane crash. They were dead men walking already. What the Bible says is that when God moves into our lives and reveals His Son to us, that's when real change can happen. That's when you can become alive. Jesus said, the hour is coming when all that are in the graves will hear the voice of the Son of Man and come forth. That's a reality. Everybody who has ever lived is going to be resurrected from the dead. And they haven't lived yet. They're going to really be alive for the first time. That's the reality. That Hebrews 11, by faith, that means faith is nothing more than believing what God says. That's all it is. If you have evidence that God said it, and you believe it, then you have faith. So Jesus said, everybody who has ever lived is going, who has died, who are in the graves, are going to come back from, but this time they're going to actually be alive. And he also said a couple of verses later, the hour is coming, and now is, when those who are dead hear the voice of the Son of Man, and those who hear live. So I'm looking out at people who are alive. Some of you look even worse than Vesna did after her accident. But you are truly alive. She wasn't. Pardon me for making a joke at your expense. At my expense. Okay, so what else? I want to tell you another story. This is a story about a man. I'm going to call him William. And his son, I'm going to call him Chip. And Chip was a troubled little boy, about 7 years old. And he was troubled because his mother and father had just gotten a divorce. And when he went to be with his mother, she was bitter and talked to her son and tried to turn her son against his father. And he was with his mother every school day, 5 days a week. And then on weekends, he would go be with his father. And his father was bitter too, although he tried not to be, and he mostly covered it up. The father had faith and believed in Jesus. This mother did not. And the boy was troubled about the whole question of God and what God was up to and whether God was there. And he couldn't see where God was. He heard his dad talking all the time about God was here and God was there. God was in the little tadpoles and God was in the butterflies. But, you know, it just didn't feel real to him, to Chip. So he started asking his father to take him places. He said, "I want you to show me where God is not." And so the father would, you know, he thought of it as a game, and he took him places. He took him to a big rock that on their uncle's land, and they got the tracker out and they rolled this huge rock from the glacier over to see if God wasn't under the rock. But they found ants and a snake under the rock. And the father argued that meant God was there, because there was life there, you know. And they went all the other places. They went to caves. They went up to a place that the father had gone to when he was a teenager, where he used to sneak up there with his buddies and drink beer. And now it was kind of a place. It was like a place under a freeway, you know, where you go up and there's a viaduct over it, and he'd go up under there. And now there's homeless guys. That's a place of shelter, and now homeless people are hanging out, and some gang members, and it's kind of scary, a little dirty and scary. And he goes up there, and the father, I didn't mention, but the father has an illness. He has multiple sclerosis, and he's lost his ability to walk, and he's dragging himself around with a little wheelchair, and his very strong, burly arms. So they pull themselves up. The father pulls himself up. The boy walks up to this place under the freeway, and they look around, and it seems pretty desolate, and maybe this is a place where God is not. But then all of a sudden, the boy starts getting scared because of the young people around and who seem to have negative ideas. And all of a sudden, an old black man comes by and chases the boy, the bigger boys away. And so the father was relieved, of course, because he couldn't help. And anyway, to make a long story a little shorter, no matter where they go, the father always spins it that God was there, and the boy is always frustrated and a little disappointed because he doesn't have faith. He doesn't have anything that makes him really believe that God really is there. And this is a very common situation in the human race, isn't it? You know, just a parenthesis here. Think about the first chapter of Romans. In the first chapter of Romans, Paul says, the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all unrighteousness and ungodliness and sin. How is it revealed? Because we die. Because the whole human race is in a bad way. And so everybody can feel God is angry. They can feel that this being that made this amazing place didn't quite finish it. He left it imperfect. And we are the reason, we are the nexus of imperfection. Okay? But then he says, but the righteousness of God is revealed. To who? What does it say in that verse? It's like a couple verses earlier, I think around the 16th or 17th verse of Romans 1. He says, the righteousness of God is revealed to those who have faith. Those who have faith can see why God permits evil. They can see that it's not because the human race sinned and it's our fault. It's not because of that. It's because God wanted us to learn to be autonomous. He wanted us to get gritty. He wanted us to experience disappointment. He wanted us to come to the end of ourselves. He wanted us to realize that we are incapable of providing everything we need for our own lives. We cannot do it. That's what God wanted us to learn. But when we have faith, God has moved into our life and made us somehow sense that we need Him, and that otherwise we're just a lump of clay going around the potter's wheel with nothing to shape us into something useful. Until that happens, we don't have faith to realize, you know, that there's a beautiful, beneficent deity working on our behalf. By faith, we can see that it's not just us that are benefiting here. Everybody. And we don't deserve to be benefited any more than anyone else. Probably less. But He has chosen to give us an inkling of what He's doing. And that is worth more than all the gold in the world. By the way, when I was doing this research, I discovered that most of the gold in the world came from a single asteroid that hit the Earth, you know, I don't know, a couple billion years ago. And most of it landed in South Africa. Just one rock that God sent to the Earth that you need some gold. Because I'm going to want some gold. Because I'm going to build me a temple. So he sends it from the Earth cloud out past Neptune. Woo! Bam! Right into South Africa. Right? That's what happened. I'm not making that up. That's what happened. Okay, so the righteousness of God is revealed by faith. It's righteous, His goodness, His love, His wisdom, His patience. That's revealed to faith, to the eye of faith, which, by the way, He gave us, you know. First He hands us this and He says, here, have some faith. And then He says, here. I don't know what that is. But it was something really clever. All right. Well, anyway. So Chip and William, what are they going to do? So they have a good weekend, and they go to all these interesting places, and the father's feeling pretty good about himself, but the son is kind of depressed because he wanted to go where God is not. And so they get into an argument, and he tells his father that his mother says that his daddy uses religion as a crutch, which really hurts a man who needs a crutch. And he kind of lost it. He kind of got angry, and he started bellowing at his son about all the things that his ex-wife had done or not done, and all the hurt it caused by her leaving because of his illness and his neediness. But the son needed her, and instead they have a war now, and the son is living in a war zone that he's going back and forth between. Well, what do you suppose the son did when his father yelled at him? He ran into the woods, and the father couldn't come after him. So the father spends a very restless night in his truck, parked at the edge of the woods, hoping against hope that his son is okay and that he finds his way back. And sure enough, at the early light of morning, the boy comes back. And the boy is sorry that he left, and he's kind of sullen, though, still. But the father has had a revelation during the night. And he puts his arms around his son, and he says, "Thank you. You took me to a place where God is not. You took me into the hatred in my heart. Now I see where God is not. God is not in my hate. And that is why God permitted evil. There are black holes at the center of every one of those galaxies. There's a black hole at the center of this galaxy where we live. And there's a black hole inside every one of us. And growing up in these last few years before God wipes away all tears and wipes away all illness, we have just a few years left, and I don't know who God is calling. I don't know if he's calling anyone. You know, there's a point, there's a time where in Revelation it says, he that is unjust, let him be unjust still. You know, right now, there's going to be a point where it's going to be too late to really make a move towards God. Wherever we are, we are. You know, what's the saying? It is what it is. I is what I is. That's the way the world is going to be for a few years. Not very far away from now. And then a whole new pattern will emerge. A whole new structure will emerge. There will be a church in place, the temple of God, and it'll be even better than gold. And the people who are now divine beings and are themselves outside of time and space and could make their own universe, they will have the power themselves, every one of us, every faithful person in this room, will have the power to make a universe like the one that we live in. But we'll probably have something even better to do with our power. Who knows what? God knows. He's got that planned out too. He's had 13.7 billion Earth years to think about it. But he probably knew about it before. Right? So that is what's going to happen. So I would say to anyone who has felt themselves at a crossroads and was wondering whether God is calling them, the answer is, listen for the still small voice. Remember Elijah? Elijah was this mighty prophet, right? And he was also had a very well-developed sense of fear. He was afraid of that angry woman, Jezebel. And he wasn't too afraid of Ahab, but he was really scared of Jezebel. She was nasty. And so after standing up in the power of God and doing all these amazing things and getting 400 prophets of Baal killed and bringing a huge revival to Israel, Jezebel says, I'm going to get you. And he runs. And he goes into a cave, and God asks him three times what he's doing in the cave. And he keeps saying, oh, I've been very faithful. And I'm the only one left, by the way. And God says, as though he never heard it, he said, he asked him again, what are you doing? What are you doing? It's just like when God talked to Adam after he sinned, and he said, Adam, where are you? What? I'm looking for you and I don't see you. Oh, I'm hiding. Oh, really? Do you want to play kick the can? I'll teach you how. But God didn't kick the can down the road. God said, oh, well, you know, I did tell you what was going to happen here. And it's going to happen. You're going to start to die now. And you're going to discover something. But anyway, so Adam did what he did. Elijah did what he did. And when God finished asking Elijah and finally had the opportunity to tell Elijah what he wanted Elijah to do, he gave Elijah a vision. And in that vision, there was going to be war, winds. Wind that was so bad it broke mountains. Well, that's we just lived through that just over 100 years ago. The winds of war broke the mountains, the kingdoms of earth. It's amazing. And then after those wars, World War I and II, then there was an earthquake. There was a revolution that broke the whole world into two parts, socialist and capitalist. And that lasted a few years, and then there was a fire that began in the late 1980s, and it's been burning ever since. And that's the fire of Islamic and other kinds of nihilistic destruction of Western governments. People who are just plain angry at what the heritage of Western civilization, which has been too big for its britches for a long time. Okay, so each time God gave him a vision of something terrible, he said, it says in the account, but God wasn't in that. He wasn't in the wind, he wasn't in the earthquake, and he wasn't in the fire. But after the fire, there was a still small voice. That was the voice of God. That's what's going to be coming. And young men, and young lady, and young man over there, and all of you folks, I'm not a betting man, but if I were, I would bet my house. I would bet my house that you are going to be alive to hear that voice of God, that still small voice that calms the trouble in the world and that brings peace to the whole world of mankind. And I don't know if God is talking to you, but listen and see if there's a voice that speaks to your heart. And each of us should continue to listen for that voice every day of our lives, even though we made a decision 10 or 20 or 50 years ago to serve God. We should continue listening for that voice. And we're going to hear that voice in what we read sometimes. And often we're going to hear it from our brethren. Or we're going to hear it from somebody who God sends who we have no idea who they are or why they came and where they're going. Just some stranger is going to go up and say something to us that is the voice of God. That is the privilege that every person who is walking with God has. Someone who knows them so well that they know how the molecules are vibrating in their brain, and he knows exactly what they need to learn and what they need to hear in order to be useful, not just to God, but to every human being in the world. That's what God is working for. May the Lord have his blessing.